How's it going, everybody? And welcome back to Locked On Clippers, the official LA Clippers podcast of the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, I am your host, Garrett Korpenning, and I am happy to be back here covering the Clippers today on Locked On Clippers. In addition to this show, I also cover the team for Clipperholics, which is FanSided's one and only Clippers blog. And you can also find me on Twitter at GA Korpenning. That's GACHORPENNING. And there you can feel free to send me questions, comments, anything else you feel relates to LA Clippers basketball. So welcome back to the show, guys. Thank you so much for giving me time yesterday to, you know, go up and to Chicago and do some things with my family there. I really appreciate you guys coming back for today's show, and happy to get started talking about our topics today. So to start things off, I'll be talking about how this past season could have ended up a whole lot differently had a few certain things changed. After that, I'll be showcasing some of my favorite second-round prospects in this year's draft class, as well as a few of my favorites that may go undrafted. You know, I do think that with the amount of great talent this year's class has, the Clippers could really find some gems at the second half and beyond this draft as well. So I'll be getting into that as well. And to close today's show, I will update you on the NBA playoffs and briefly address some of the things I've missed since Tuesday's show. Before that, though, I would also like to comment today specifically on a loss within the NBA Twitter community before I get into the main portion of today's episode. So yesterday, we learned that Bo Cherny, and I hope I'm saying that right, committed suicide on Tuesday. Bo was an active part of the community and was praised by many for his kind and gracious spirit. I didn't have the honor of knowing Bo before his death, but I would like to hope that we could have been close, and I sincerely wish that we, as a community, could have done more for him. If anyone is listening that has ever struggled or is struggling with this sort of thing, please know that there are people out there who can help you. The suicide prevention hotline is always open, and I promise there are people who care about you and about making your life the very best it can be. Several people I am close to on Twitter have made it known that they can be relied on for help with this sort of thing, and I want it to be known that I can as well. My DMs are always open, and I am always here to talk. A fundraiser has been set up online for Lost and Found Youth, which provides services, crisis support, and shelter for LGBTQ plus youth in Atlanta, Georgia, in honor of Bo. And I'll be linking the fundraiser to my podcast tweet on Twitter, once again at GA Korpenning, and I'd encourage everyone to donate if they're able to help prevent this sort of thing from happening in the future. So now getting into today's show, this past regular season was filled to the brim with what-ifs. You know, for example, what if the team remained healthy? What if Blake Griffin had been traded? And most of all, what if Chris Paul had stayed just one more season in Los Angeles? And, you know, I have had a lot of these questions myself, and, you know, it is basically impossible to ever know, you know, the real answers to these questions because there is just so many things to factor into the potential answers and the real answers to the questions as well. But I'd like to try to the best of my abilities. So without further ado, here are my top what-ifs of the LA Clippers 2017-2018 NBA season. First of all is an obvious one. What if the team had remained healthy? And that one, I think, you know, I'm not even going to pretend that this was at all a possibility last season, given the team's history with random injuries and whatever else goes along with those, and also with just the players themselves that tend to be more injury-prone than not, especially, you know, bringing in guys like Gallinari in the offseason, you know, that kind of was to be expected, and then, you know, retaining Blake Griffin with that big contract in the summer, he himself was injury-prone as well, so when you sign guys that have that kind of history to them, that's kind of to be expected, and you can't totally fault them for just, you know, being the way they are on the court. So unless it is like a repetitive thing, like with Derrick Rose or something like that, I mean, he just really can't help it. So I want to imagine just for a little bit, for a second here, that Danilo Gallinari, let's say he played all 82 games last season. Let's say Patrick Beverley didn't get that season-ending injury, surgery in November. And let's say Milos Teodosic didn't miss half of his rookie season. And in addition to that, let's say Blake, you know, played most of the games that he was in. He didn't miss that month of that injury there. Let's say Austin Rivers played all his games as well. Let's say the whole team just, you know, was available every game, ready to go. Not possible, certainly, but let's say it happened. I think it is safe to say that a fully healthy Clippers team would have been a lock for the playoffs this season. NBA analysts and you know, writers, that sort of thing, all predicted the Clippers would win roughly 43-44 games last season was the consensus that I saw. And that's, of course, without injuries factoring in. And I think, you know, given the team won 42 games last year while missing starters for nearly 300 combined games, I think it is clear that everyone underestimated what they could do with that lineup. So that lineup there, I'm not talking about here, that was started for most of those first games of the year, was Beverly, Rivers, Gallinari, Griffin, and Jordan. And that also happened to be the second most used five-man rotation last season, playing just over 146 minutes across the entire year and outscoring opponents by nearly 8 points per 100 possessions. And I do think that is an impressive mark. But what's interesting is that Doc Rivers deployed this lineup as his starting rotation seven different times, which, incredibly, because of the amount of injuries and different rotational changes last season, that was the most common starting lineup used by the team last season. During that stretch of games, it was a straight seven-game stretch. The team went 3-4 during that period there, beating playoff teams like the Utah Jazz and Portland Trailblazers. That game, of course, was the one in which Blake Griffin had his game-winning three, and falling to teams like the Detroit Pistons, Miami Heat, and Golden State Warriors. That stretch, you know, was a tough one. Had a lot of difficult teams in there, including the Warriors, the Heat, and the Trailblazers there, all of which made the playoffs this season, all of which looked pretty impressive throughout the entire course of the year. But I do think there are a few reasons why the team did sort of underperform with that rotation and during that time. And I think most notably was that this is before the Clippers really found out what Lou Williams and Montrezl Harrell could do for the team. I think, you know, for the first few months of the year, from October through December, the duo of Harrell and Williams were averaging a combined 28.8 points per game. And then from January through April, that same combination there, that number went up to 35.6, which is nearly 7 points higher. And, you know, that might not seem like much, but considering that five-man lineup was 8 points per 100 possessions better, another 7 points off the bench would have been a welcome addition to the scoring total and maybe vaulted the Clippers over their opposing teams in that that time there, and could have progressed them further on the winning trail down the road there had that lineup stayed healthy and had that been a more regular thing than just seven games of the year. I think the downside, though, of all the starters being healthy all the time, which is, you know, the what if here, is then would be the bench development. Montrezl Harrell and William and Lou Williams, to name two of those guys, wouldn't have gotten the chance to grow so much and play such a crucial role this past season had their higher ups not gotten hurt, or had they just not gotten the chance to play it as often, or have the ball in their hands as often to go with that. Blake Griffin obviously had his injury, early in the season that let Lou Williams sort of take the reins and take over in LA, and that that turned into what we saw this season with his confidence boost and with him, you know, having several 20, 30, 40 point games, including that 150 point game at Golden State. So you can say that because Griffin was hurt, that, you know, gave Williams the ability to play his best basketball there. But if the whole team was healthy all the time, you might not have gotten that same production out of guys like Williams, as well as Harrell, and other guys as well, like, you know, Ty Wallace, CJ Williams, Sendarius Thornwell. All those guys really stepped up and had to step up because their higher-ups were hurt so often. That's the reason Wesley Johnson started the third or fourth most games this season on the team and played the third or fourth most minutes, because, you know, Gallinari was always hurt, or Blake was always hurt, and because he is a versatile forward that can play those two positions, he was playing a lot more games and a lot more minutes than anyone else because, you know, he had to. So I do think that, you know, guys off the bench like Harrell and Williams, they would have gotten a lot better still over the course of the year, and I think partially because Rivers would have figured out more efficient ways to have the bench and the starters complement each other. So you wouldn't have to be a worry about, you know, which rotations to play, who's going to start, who's going to be on the bench, that sort of thing, how they work together. But still, I don't think it's likely that Harrell would have been scoring over 13 points per game during that same stretch there of January to April had Blake Griffin not been hurt for so long and then traded. Because of that, he did get the chance to play in 78 games this season, starting three of them as well. And, you know, he did get the chance to play a lot more minutes and become a lot more vital part of the offense and, really make his mark on the game in the way that he really did last season. So to go along with that, I also think that, you know, other guys like CJ Williams and Tyrone Wallace might not have been needed on the team, since he's already had a pretty deep point guard rotation with Patrick Beverley and Juwan Evans. And, of course, Milos Teodosic as well. So, because of the things that the team sustained, a lot of the younger guys, a lot of the underdeveloped guys on the bench were able to get a lot more minutes and become the players we know them as now and develop and, you know, get more familiar with the team and the rotations, that sort of thing as well. So I think, you know, those players did make a bigger impact than we expected. And while wishing, you know, the whole team was healthy all year, that might have got you the playoffs and that sort of thing, but our bench is a lot more well-developed now because of that. And are those players going to be a lot more crucial to the team and play bigger roles in the future? So I guess if there is one benefit of having most of your team be decimated with injuries, the top one would be overall development of the, you know, seconds and thirds in the bench there. So so that's, you know, that is what that is. But I want to go back to Montrezl Harrell for a second there and talk about his second half of his season after Blake Griffin was traded and talk specifically about the Blake Griffin trade. You know, because one of the biggest questions everyone had after he was traded and after the season ended was, well, what if he hadn't been traded? What if he was still here? Where would the team go? What would the direction be? All that sort of questions, all those sorts of things. So I do want to say that the Griffin trade, as much as it sucks to say this, was inevitable, because I talked after the trade happened in January to a source close to the team, and they told me that the Clippers had been shopping Griffin almost all season long. So it seemed like he would be moved before season's end, you know, and whether or not he was made aware of those terms before he signed his massive contract with the team last summer, I don't really know that those details. But it does seem like the case was that from the beginning of the season, the Clippers were looking to trade Griffin and acquire some younger assets and that sort of thing. And Jerry West did sort of verify that a couple days back, talking about how, you know, Blake Griffin just didn't really fit the future of the team, wasn't really the guy to fit the face of the franchise anymore. So Jerry West certainly alluding to that kind of thing and makes it, you know, seem a lot more obvious as to why the Clippers would give them such a big contract if they wanted to move it and get some better assets and that kind of thing. They could clear a lot more cap space and give themselves more room to sign free agents and that sort of thing in the future. But if he hadn't been moved, I do think the Clippers would have made a playoff appearance last year, albeit a short one. That also means that Tobias Harris and Boban Marjanovic never would have been part of the team. And, you know, that, first of all, right there is a little bit painful, because those guys are so much fun to watch. And also because Harris had such a fantastic season with LA that, you know, it would have kind of blown to not seen that. But again, we would have had Blake Griffin, and the rest of the team would have been the same and, you know, all healthy and that sort of thing as well. So it's a pretty even trade-off there, I would say. I do think that Griffin would have been good for a few more wins this season, maybe go from 42 to like 45, 46, 47, somewhere in the upper 40 range. And, you know, with that, it's not a big jump, but the Clippers, I think, could have secured anything from the 3 seed to the 8 seed with those couple more wins there, given the little amount of separation and win totals between the teams in the Western Conference playoffs this year. But then, of course, the Clippers wouldn't have had a shot at the lottery and wouldn't have had any picks in this year's draft at all. Clippers don't have a second-round pick in this year's draft and traded their own pick away. They would have had their own first-round pick, but they traded Houston's pick away, would not have had Detroit's first overall or first-round pick in this year's draft as well. So they would have had one first-round pick, would have been just outside the lottery. There is still a lot of talent there, but I do think, you know, to miss out mostly on such a class would have been a disappointment, especially after an early playoff exit. So, like I said, I do think that a Griffin trade, it was inevitable, and it was a matter of when, not if, kind of going off of that as well. So my third and final what-if question here is, what if Chris Paul had stayed one more season? And here's where I think things really get interesting. Houston and Golden State, they really set themselves apart this season from the rest of the West and the whole entire NBA there as a whole thing. And that likely wouldn't have been the case had Paul remained in LA. Instead, I do think it would have been the Clippers and Warriors atop the conference with everyone else not far behind, given, you know, the lack of separation of this year's conference. But I do think that given that, it sure seems like the Clippers would have had their easiest path to the conference finals this year, because there hasn't been one single team that has looked invincible. The Golden State Warriors, they've lost a few games this postseason, currently tied with the Warriors, with the Rockets right now in that series, and the Rockets just won a pretty impressive game at Golden State a couple days ago, and I'll talk more about that later. But like I was saying, that no one in this conference has looked invincible all season. And, you know, on the other side of the conference, on the other side of the league, you have the Eastern Conference, where right now you have the Cavs and the Celtics battling to determine who sucks less. And, it is important to note that Vegas has already favored both Houston and Golden State in the finals, regardless of who moves on in the East. So, you know, regardless of if the Cavs move on in that series, the Celtics do, whoever wins this conference finals between the Rockets and the Warriors right now will be favored in the finals. So I do think it's without question that a team of Chris Paul and Blake Griffin, DeAndre Jordan would have been favored. That did succeed in the regular season and playoffs would be favored over the Cavs and Celtics teams that look a little bit diminished right now. So what I'm really saying in all this is this really could have been the Clippers' year, and it hurts to say that. It kind of sucks just because after 6 years with Chris Paul there, and the highest point they achieved being a second round exit, it sucks. And unfortunately, I totally believe it's true. I know the chemistry between the team was toxic. I know that was an issue, and there probably would have been one little slip up in the playoffs that would have kept us away from the conference finals and the NBA finals, because that's just kind of what we do best. Whether it's blowing a 3-1 lead to Houston or underperforming for whatever reason in the playoffs, that's kind of how the team does it. But I do think that, all things considered, this would have been the year. But going away from that, I do think the Clippers and our fans as well are lucky, because we might be in a better place now because of that Blake Griffin trade, and because Noam was healthy, and because Chris Paul is in Houston. Because with a future-oriented direction and a focus on youth, the Clippers will quietly build themselves up as a giant, and I believe win the title sooner rather than later. With Jerry West at the helm, and with the personnel we have now, and with the amount of picks and youth and talent coming to the team with the draft this year, who we already have right now, I do think that there's no place to go but up right now, and that, because Noam was healthy and because Blake was gone and because Chris Paul is in Houston, all those things sort of freed up the team to be able to do what they're doing right now, and that is, moving forward at a rate that is pretty impressive. So it does kind of hurt to think that, this could have been the year, that this could have been the time we finally amounted to something, but in retrospect, I think it's a pretty good trade-off. I think that where we are now, looking forward, is a pretty nice place to be. And certainly a great place to be, as opposed to, you win the finals and then you come back and maybe Blake's gone after that. Maybe Chris Paul goes to Houston after that. Maybe that team falls apart, and then what? You have a bad pick. You have a lot less cap space. Maybe teams will be hesitant to trade and that sort of thing as well. You can't really say for sure, but maybe the place that we're in now with the future we have now is better than the future we would have, had we not won, or had we not, had this not been our year, I kept everyone like that and had everyone healthy. But that's a lot to think about. That's a lot to say. Again, totally out of the question to even wonder if that's even being a possibility, just because of the amount of things it would take to factor into that. But it is something to consider, and I want you to think about it as well. And, if you do have an opinion on that, go ahead and message me on Twitter. I'm always open there. Always wanting to know what you guys think about what I say here and all my segments. So if you think it was the Clippers' year as well, message me and let me know. If you don't, let me know why as well. And then I want you guys to sit tight for my next segment, because I'll be profiling some of the favorite second round and later prospects in this year's draft class in this week's edition of Player Showcase. If your company is interested in advertising to men between the ages of 18 and 44, your company should be sponsoring this podcast. Locked On Clippers is listened to by 98% men, and 80% of those men between the ages of 18 and 44. If that speaks to you, that's a fan base you want to advertise to, shoot me a message over at gcorpenning@outlook.com. That's gcorpenning@outlook.com to get things started. Our rates are very reasonable, and I would love to do business with you and your company. So coming up, guys, I'll be addressing some news around the league, but first I'd like to make you all familiar with some players that could end up outperforming their draft positions, or even, end up undrafted and make a pretty significant impact on a G League team, or come up and, do the same with the NBA. So I have already spent quite a bit of time talking about guys like Grayson Allen, as well as Chimezie Metu, Svetislav Mykhailiuk, and Javon Carter, and in past episodes there. So today isn't going to be for them, although I am in love with their potential, and I do think that buying a second-round pick to acquire any of those guys would be a successful move. Instead, I do want to focus on a few other late second-round to undrafted range players that could really make a difference for the LA Clippers. First of those is Bonzi Colson. He's a 6'5 senior forward from Notre Dame. He is projected to go undrafted, although I thoroughly believe that Bonzi Colson is the best player in this draft that no one is talking about, because of his college success. He dominated the ACC for the second half of his four-year career at Notre Dame and led the conference rebounds per game in back-to-back seasons, all while standing at just 6'5 and playing power forward and center for the Irish. Colson likely will not get drafted because of his age and his size, and he's not quick enough to play either the guard positions in the NBA, and he's also undersized to play any big positions in the NBA as well. But he is extremely skilled, has a very unorthodox but successful game, and I think, you know, he even developed a three-point shot in his final two seasons of his NCAA career, which goes to show his versatility and how successful he could be at the next step, which is the NBA or the G League as well. A good comp for him is Charles Barkley, and I don't want to say that he's going to be as good as Barkley because he won't, but the two are very, very similar in terms of size and play style as well. Barkley stood just 6'6 when he was dominating the NBA, and while Colson measures 1 inch shorter, both were and are physical bigs that fight under the glass and use their wide bodies to their advantage. And while at Notre Dame, Colson posted one of the most ridiculous player efficiency ratings that I have ever seen at 31.9, as well as averaging nearly 20 points and 10 rebounds per game with the Irish there. So he's a very efficient player, very skilled player, uses his small frame or his small height, but big frame to his size or to his advantage. And I do think that if he doesn't get drafted, I think he will end up in the G League and will probably get picked up by the Spurs organization to name one team there, because they seem like they have a thing for highly skilled players that kind of fall short in the more popular categories. So I think if anything, he could be useful in some small ball lineups. But I still think, you know, for being an undrafted player, he certainly has potential to become a star in the G League and a pretty solid contributor off the bench in the NBA. Moving on now is Kostas Antetokounmpo. He's a 6'10 forward, a freshman from Dayton. And, you know, that name should sound and will sound familiar to you because, yes, Kostas is, in fact, the youngest brother of NBA star Giannis Antetokounmpo. Giannis being the oldest. Thanas, I believe, is his name, being the middle child there. And Kostas is the youngest. He's 19, freshman from Daytona. And, you know, while he is, Dayton, and while he is much more raw and ultimately not as talented as Giannis, Kostas, I think, does have potential to become a G League star and make a pretty big contribution if he's ever caught up to the NBA level. He's a power forward and he's a center. Probably going to stay that way, too, because of how raw he is. He's not as skilled, not going to be able to do the things that Giannis is doing. But I think, if anything, his name alone should warrant a two-way contract. We saw how important those can be to a team with Clippers last year with guys like Ty Wallace and Jamil Wilson and CJ Williams. So, you know, that could be the kind of thing that Kostas could do to break into the NBA as well. The Clippers have not yet scheduled a workout with them yet, but I think it'd be best if they do, because the youngest Antetokounmpo has plenty of potential and a pretty lofty ceiling with the skill set and size he has. So, and lastly, with these prospects, I want to talk about Jared Terrell, a 6'3 combo guard from Rhode Island. He's a senior as well. Terrell was arguably Rhode Island's top player this past season, and I think he has the numbers to prove that as well. He scored nearly 17 points per game and shot 41.4% from three in his final season at Rhode Island, and has the bulk body of a power forward. And, you know, if you look him up right now, Jared Terrell, I can promise you, I have never seen someone with that height look so huge. Like, he's scary big. He's a physical guard. Just looks intimidating. Like, you don't want to mess with him. But like Colson and Antetokounmpo, Terrell should be able to get a solid spot in the G League before earning a two-way contract and making his way into the NBA. If he was a few years younger, I think it's possible he could be a first-round talent with the numbers he put up last season and the size he has. But I think lack of overall progression seems to have kept him down, unlike Colson, and a lot like Antetokounmpo as well. So that's going to wrap up my second segment of the day, the player showcase there. So if you do hear any of those names called on draft night, Colson, Antetokounmpo, or Terrell, that should be something of a surprise. If you don't, you know, that's to be expected. These guys are probably going to go undrafted in this year's NBA draft and should be earning some flyers from several NBA teams and G League organizations. So keep an eye on those guys. I certainly will myself. Could really have a big impact in a few years in the NBA. So guys, to wrap things up today, I'll be hitting on some news around the NBA. So first of all, the Rockets topped the Warriors on Tuesday night at Oracle, 95-92. This is one of the things I meant to talk about in yesterday's show, but just didn't really get time to because of, you know, the traveling, that sort of thing. Chris Paul and James Harden combined for 57 points in that game, and they also outscored the Warriors, the Rockets outscored the Warriors, 25-12 in the fourth quarter, which I believe was the most highest point differential for a opposing team at Oracle since 2007. In the fourth quarter. So what the Rockets did in that game was extremely substantial. Really came in there and at the end of the game, you know, won it when it mattered most. Played their best basketball at the best time they could. And, you know, I think more than anything, it was a really, really grueling game and one that was entertaining to watch and probably the best game we've had all playoffs so far. And I think that's really important because that's kind of the game we've been waiting for. A lot of these games so far have been blowouts, just haven't been close late in the game. They can turn it off, that sort of thing. But this one especially was one that was suspenseful down to the very last second. The Rockets had a two-point lead with about 13 seconds to go in the game, and the Warriors got the rebound and came down the end of the floor and didn't call timeout, had one remaining anyway, and got the ball to Klay Thompson. And as time was close to expiring, he fired up a fadeaway turnaround jumper from mid-range, and that it did go long, had a chance to go in, but it did go long over the back of the rim. Chris Paul then caught the ball and got fouled in the process with 0.6 seconds to go. Chris Paul went down and missed the first free throw that could have made it a three-point game right there. Had a chance to make it a four-point game. Instead, missed that one, made the second, made it a three-point game. The Warriors called time with 0.5 seconds remaining in the game. Drew up a sideline play for Steph Curry, who somehow got open on the sideline and just barely missed a game-tying three that likely would have been good had it gone. So it's a fantastic game, full of suspense, full of energy, and that series should be one that's going to be pretty impressive when it goes into Game 5, which is tonight at 6 p.m. Pacific time. That game will take place in Houston, and I'm looking forward to see what the Rockets are capable of there. And then going to the Eastern Conference now, the Celtics topped the Cavaliers last night, 96-83, taking a 3-2 series lead. Biggest headline from that game is LeBron James just being tired. You know, he has played 100 total games this season, including the regular season and the playoffs. So that, you know, makes a lot of sense given the amount of minutes he's played as well. But, you know, the Cavaliers will have to figure something out if they're going to win this series because they can't just expect LeBron to do everything. Yes, he's probably the greatest player of all time, the greatest player of our time at least. And if he, I mean, there's only so much you can ask of someone before they start to get tired. And even LeBron James, you know, he's a human. He gets tired. And it seems like that's what happened in game five there in Boston. And on the other side of the floor, Jason Tatum, Boston Celtics rookie, scored 24 points in that one, passing Magic Johnson for playoff scoring by a rookie. He has been extremely impressive this season. One of the finalists for Rookie of the Year, and rightfully so. So game six of that series is Friday at 5:30 Pacific time. The Celtics do have a chance to close that one out and go to the NBA Finals and take on either the Rockets or the Warriors. The Cavs in that game are going to have a game seven in Boston. Should be a pretty exciting game. I think either scenario is pretty great and pretty exciting to see. So guys, that is going to wrap up today's show. Thank you once again for tuning in to Locked On Clippers. Come back tomorrow, Friday's show, to hear about the week's top stories, some coaching updates regarding Doc Rivers and Mike Woodson, and more about the NBA playoffs, specifically talking about the Rockets and Warriors game from tonight. I'll have full coverage of that one. So, guys, thank you so much for listening today, Locked On Clippers. Once again, I'm Garrett Corpenning, and I hope you enjoyed today's show. You can find more from Locked On Podcast Network on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, and other online podcast platforms. And as always, I'll catch you guys tomorrow.